So sometime pretty soon, there'll be a new face on the $20 bill, Harriet Tubman. And with the image of her, most of us know, she's an old woman. She looks a bit stern. Her hair is covered, you know, by a dark cloth. But there's another less well-known portrait of Harriet Tubman in which she's holding a musket. Now, just think about that for a second. Why would Harriet Tubman pose with a gun? I mean, weren't the abolitionists and, you know, later the civil rights leaders, weren't they supposed to be peaceful? Well, law professor Nicholas Johnson is the author of Negroes and the Gun, and he told Steve Paulson that the history of Black American gun ownership has been almost erased.
Tubman with a musket is sort of a controversial image. And as you go through the history, you see some people who are uncomfortable with it. One biographer of Tubman's argued that her guns were always unloaded, that they were symbolic only. I'm not sure how one would know that. But yeah, I think people are uncomfortable with the idea.
Why do you think they're uncomfortable with the idea of her carrying a gun?
Because there's a disconnect between that sort of historical utility of firearms and the sort of modern issues that we grapple with on a daily basis, especially in the Black community.
But when you think about her job, I mean, she was an abolitionist working on the Underground Railroad, I mean, you know, trying to protect escaped slaves. Carrying a gun made a lot of sense in that environment, didn't it?
One of the reasons that I wrote the book is that we have, in the modern era, gotten to a point where our discomfort with gun issues in the modern context has caused us to sort of lose sight of those important lessons and or at least the heroes. And people can draw their own views about what the lessons from that time are. But this is certainly a history that I think is worth remembering.
Well, let's talk about the history a bit because, I mean, frankly, if I'm trying to think of kind of famous historical episodes involving Black people with guns, it's actually hard to think of that many. I mean, you know, in recent times, you know, think of the Black Panthers, you know, going back further, John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry. You know, those are the kinds of things that would end up in textbooks. But I can't think of that many episodes where, you know, you have historical examples, the kinds of things that are written about in textbooks where Black people are using guns to resist racism.
As you get into the details, what you find is almost exactly the opposite of what you've described. That is, all of the sort of famous notable figures had some sort of connection to either an endorsement, affirmative endorsement of armed self-defense, or carried guns or used guns in self-defense in the freedom struggle. And in fact, it's hard to find someone ultimately who wasn't in that category. For example, I use Martin Luther King in the book and the sort of the famous quote that was part of his conversation with Robert Williams. And people are shocked when they find that King endorsed self-defense particularly. And one of the things that King said, and I'll just paraphrase it, was that there's a distinction between self-defense and political violence, that self-defense is legitimate and that, on the other hand, political violence was folly, was a hazard. And that distinction is one that runs through the freedom movement. You see people, you see Frederick Douglass in the 1850s, engaging this sort of distinction. You see similar icons of the movement in the latter part of the 19th century. Ida B. Wells, for example, pressing the same distinction. W.E.B. Du Bois at the turn of the century, and all through the modern civil rights movement, you see this theme. So what King basically crystallized in his debate and his conversation with Robert Williams was a theme that was longstanding, and it is vastly underreported, which was, again, one of the reasons that I wrote the book.
Well, and to cite a couple of the people you just mentioned, I mean, to actually quote them, Frederick Douglass said at one point when he was asked, you know, what do former slaves need to resist the manhunters trying to capture them? He said, a good revolver, a steady hand, and a determination to shoot. And then a little later, the anti-lynching activist Ida B. Wells said, the Winchester rifle should have a place of honor in every Black home. The more the Afro-American yields and cringes and begs, the more he is insulted, outraged, and lynched.
Absolutely. And Wells was talking about the practical utility of firearms, and she was specifically referring to two recent averted lynchings where the armed black community, one in Paducah, Kentucky, another in Jacksonville, Florida, where armed blacks had come to the aid of potential lynch victims and saved those people. And this was not, you know, a daily story, but it was common enough that people like Wells and T. Thomas Fortune, who was, you know, the famous editor of the New York Age, all were sort of strong advocates of blacks arming themselves for self-defense against lynch violence and other sorts of terrorism.
So why do we not usually hear this story about how, you know, black people often did carry guns for self-defense?
Well, you know, the glib sense of the civil rights movement is that it was one of nonviolence. So if you ask people what they know about that history about the movement, it was sort of a nonviolent struggle. And in our popular conversation have cast blacks as victims, as sort of stoic sufferers in the face of you know, the horrible things that were happening around them. And also, if you think about the history, lots of people will say, well, we had a civil war and then we had Reconstruction, to the degree people know anything about that. And then black people just sat on the sidelines until the 1960s and we really didn't have to pay attention to them. But it's that period, really, between Reconstruction and the 1960s that my book focuses on in detail and shows that there was this rich, not only political struggle, but also a struggle for survival where guns were vital practical resources for people who were dealing with terrorism, were dealing with private threats. And that story, I guess, just does not fit the glib narrative that people were walking around with on a daily basis.
Well, and we've mentioned certain people who said some pretty interesting things about guns. And to quote another person, the civil rights activist Fannie Lou Hamer, when she was asked how she survived the threats from midnight white terrorists, she responded, "I keep a shotgun in every corner of my bedroom, and the first cracker even looked like he wants to throw some dynamite on my porch won't write his mama again." That's strong stuff.
On issues of private self-defense, she was quite willing to use a firearm for self-defense. And she carried on this tradition from, so there's another part of the story where you see disclosed that Fannie Lou Hamer introduced Stokely Carmichael to what might have been the first pistol that he carried as he was working in the South.
I mean, that's a sort of a fascinating moment in history you're describing. I mean, Fannie Lou Hamer, one of the icons of the civil rights movement, you know, and then sort of passing on this bit of knowledge, I guess you would say, to Stokely Carmichael, who, you know, later became famous for being involved with the Black Panthers.
Yeah. And it wasn't just Fannie Lou Hamer. So you see other instances, Constance Baker Motley, for example, Judge Motley, when she was in Birmingham with Thurgood Marshall pressing desegregation cases, they stayed at the home of one of the local activists, and Judge Motley talks about how they were guarded by black men with guns, some on the roof, some secreted around the house, and that they were given an armed escort every day to court when they went to do the sort of formal work of the freedom struggle.
Yeah. There's a question you ask in your book, where is our Leonidas? The reference, of course, is to the Greek warrior who died while defending Sparta against the overwhelming force of the Persian army. So I'm wondering sort of how you see that in the context of this history that we've been talking about. I mean, sort of, is this a classic battle of a champion who meets force with force,
right,
even in the face of overwhelming odds?
Right. One of my impulses for writing the book was to try and address a sort of question that I had gotten at various points, sometimes from young black men and women who look back at the history of the civil rights movement and wonder sort of plaintively, well, you know, didn't anybody fight back? And one response to that is, well, fighting back was not plausible because look at the overwhelming odds. But if you look at other cultures, and this was the Leonidas reference, fighting back even against long odds and even losing, is the foundational clay of building up heroes. And one of the things I wanted to do in this book was to revive and reclaim those heroes that I always knew were out there. So where is our Leonidas? My goodness. I mean, I think it's an important aspect of trying to put into context these stories where oftentimes blacks used guns in self-defense in an effort that failed. That is, you find some shootout with the Klan where the Klan prevails. Well, the question is, were those people simply victims, or can we think about them in a more textured context? Should they be on someone's list of heroes? And what I argue or try to present in the book is that thinking about those people simply as victims is a disservice to their fight, is a disservice to their struggle. And we, like other cultures, that is black culture in the U.S., like other cultures, we long for, ultimately, these sorts of heroes. And they are, in fact, out there, and they're just loads. There are tons of them.
So, Professor Johnson, I have a personal question. Do you own a gun?
Yes, I do. I grew up in West Virginia. My parents got me my first gun when I was 14 years old. I did not know anyone who didn't have a firearm. My uncle was the president of the Greenbrier County NAACP from 1954 to 1977. And I was probably 10 years old when he told me the story of using a gun to fight off a racist attack. I saw and sort of experienced very early on the idea that there was not a real disconnect between the notion of the nonviolent civil rights movement and private self-defense.
And so for you, I mean, do you have the gun because this is sort of part of your personal history, part of the cultural history you've been talking about? Or do you have that partly for self-defense?
When I first started in academia, someone asked me the same question. And at the time, I was teaching at a little college in central Pennsylvania. And my response then was, I'm a black man married to a white woman living in the United States of America. Of course, I have a gun. So maybe that's the best response to the self-defense question.
Nicholas Johnson is a law professor. He teaches at Fordham Law School, and he's the author of Negroes and the Gun, The Black Tradition of Arms. Steve Paulson talked with him.